Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Cryptic Artifacts by Philippa Norcross and Michael Anderley. Narrated by Amanda Ronconi. Chapter 1. Maggie never got tired of running as a wolf. The feeling of the ground under her paws never got old, nor did the sensation of wind in her fur. She could fly across the fields and through the forests all day and still be ready to go all night. She was supposed to be training, practicing difficult terrain, hunting, testing her limits, and working with her time magic as much as she could without exhausting herself. The training was going fine. She was making progress, learning how to navigate the slippery snowmelt and mud along the riverbank, and determining how to use the knotted and fallen trees to her advantage, rather than simply viewing them as obstacles. In the back of her head, she couldn't stop imagining her pack, imagining half a dozen more wolves in the forest around her, some in front, some behind, some off to the side. No one visible, but you didn't need to see a pack to know it was there. You could feel it. She still could if she concentrated hard enough. If she cast back in her memory and imagined Liam, Adam, Noah, and Lucas all running through the forest around her, fighting off bears. She remembered their smells and the scent of blood on the snow. She recalled watching and hearing the little signals they used to communicate while shifted, and she imagined herself using them too. You could do so many more things with a pack than you could on your own. That branch hanging over the river there, for instance. If she had another wolf or two with her, they would weigh enough together to use it as a bridge. It wouldn't dip far enough on her own, and the jump to the other side of the river would be too far. Having a pack was wonderful. Only, she most definitely did not have a pack. She had told them in no uncertain words to F off. Most of the time, she didn't regret this decision. She wouldn't have fit in with the pack, with their customs and traditions that put her at the bottom of the social ladder. Not to mention, she was a female shifter, which, well, it bumped her off the ladder and into the gutter, to be honest. In general, she didn't miss it. Didn't miss the hostile stares. The open discussion of her is nothing more than an object, an abomination, even. But sometimes, she missed the feeling of a pack as it ought to be, without all the nonsense and hoo-ha. Working together, hunting together, running together, sharing this incredible existence with people who understood. Maggie sighed and turned back toward where she'd left her Civic on the side of the road. She knew better than to keep training when she got melancholy like this, or mopey, as Matt put it. Could you blame her? Who wouldn't mope in a situation like this? Living under the radar, waiting for a bunch of ticked-off shifters to hunt you down. She loped off across the field. Time for a hot shower. Maggie stood under the hot water for far longer than she needed to, but damn if it wasn't what she needed to chase the blues away. She leaned against the wall, letting the water run through her hair and drip over her forehead, and thanked her lucky stars she'd picked an apartment building with a functional water heater, not to mention reasonable water pressure. It was the little things in life. She got out and toweled off while looking at herself in the mirror. She liked the shower in this apartment, but that was about all she liked. Apart from the nice view of the park from her living room windows, everything else in this place screamed temporary, which was fine since it was supposed to be, but it still didn't make for a very homey feel. When home was what you missed most of all, well, it didn't help. She flipped her phone over from where it had been lying screen down on the bathroom counter and made a face as she saw the notification banner. One voicemail, one missed call. Dollars to donuts, it was coal. She dressed before checking the recent calls list and took her time doing it. Eventually, she couldn't put it off any longer, and when she opened the phone app, she was not surprised to see Cole's name next to the red missed call label and icon. She sighed and hit play on the voicemail. "Hey, Mags. Just wanted to let you know I get off work at 5 this afternoon, and Dr. Rashid has sworn up and down that he isn't going to con me into working a double. So, you know, if you're free, I'd love to have you over for supper. Let me know." Beep. Maggie sighed again and leaned on the bathroom counter, hanging her head and staring at the chip in the edge of the sink. She'd been avoiding Cole for weeks, long enough that she couldn't pretend he hadn't noticed yet. At first, it had been handy to have him working his practicum at the hospital, because stupid long hours meant less time for him to miss her, and fewer excuses she needed to manufacture. Were they still together? Yes, sort of, technically. They hadn't spent any real time together in a couple of months now, and there was only so much you could blame on one half of the relationship being in the final stages of getting his doctor of magical medicine. The rest was plain old whatever the hell was going on with Maggie. As it always did, right about now, the memory of Liam's eyes and their brief kiss flashed through her head, and she squeezed her eyes shut. "That life is closed to you," she muttered, in the general direction of the faucet. "Even if there was something between you and Liam, you can't go back." Unfortunately, like every other time this happened, logic did nothing to convince her fickle heart, and when she finally pushed herself off the bathroom counter, she still felt the ache in her chest. She needed to eat something. She'd worked hard that morning, and bzzzt, bzzzt, went her phone in her hand. She lifted it to see a text from Pharaoh. "It's go time." Well, that settled that. Maggie shoved her phone in the back pocket of her jeans and went to her bedroom, where she yanked a sweater out of her closet and pulled it on. She unplugged her phone charger from beside her bed, coiled it and stuck it in her sweater pocket, did a once-over of the room, hesitated in thought, then sighed, and left. She hauled open the coat closet, the door was annoyingly sticky, and grabbed the duffel bag sitting on the floor inside. She slung it over her shoulder, threaded a jacket through its strap, and stuck her feet into her boots. She turned, looked over the apartment one more time, and stopped. She ran to the kitchen, snagged a handful of granola bars out of the cupboard, shoved them in her pocket beside her phone charger, and left. She locked the door behind her and headed for the back staircase. Her footsteps echoed on the bare concrete walls as she descended to the underground parking garage. This wasn't exactly how she'd planned to spend her day, or the next however long. But when you made plans that involved keeping you safe from those aforementioned shifters out for your blood, you didn't argue when your best friend said it was time to go. Chapter 2. The underground parking garage of Maggie's new apartment building shared entrances and parking spots with a few other buildings, namely another apartment building and a small strip mall. This meant the place was somewhat labyrinthine, which resulted in plentiful hiding spots. Pharaoh was a natural planner and had pulled together almost every detail of this escape plan. For instance, Maggie had 5 potential hiding spots designated within the garage. Each had advantages and disadvantages. One of them was closest to her apartment stairs. That one was supposed to be a last resort, since they were operating on the assumption that whoever was coming for Maggie would know where she lived and might follow her down the back stairs. Other hiding spots were across the garage, meant as backups if she wasn't coming in from the apartment. The ideal spot was midway between opposite ends of the underground complex, near the back entrance to the parking garage. Cars still came and went, mostly employees from the strip mall, but the location was far quieter than the general use entrance. This was where Maggie headed, slipping along the inner wall of the parking garage, keeping as flat to the concrete as possible. The lights were all mounted on the concrete pillars that held the place up, not on the walls. They all pointed into the main thoroughfares between the rows of parking spots. Some light got to those back walls, but there were enough shadows from the ductwork and pipes on the ceiling that it was tough to see anyone back there. This made it difficult for people to read the spot numbers from their cars, and rumors were starting that the management company would add more lights. They hadn't yet, luckily. Maggie tucked herself into the corner Pharaoh had discovered, a little alcove that didn't seem to have any purpose other than to collect random trash that blew in when the wind rushed down the inn ramps. It was on the other side of a staircase and a janitor's closet. The spot was dirty and grimy as sin, and it was all but invisible from anywhere else you stood in the garage. She settled down to wait, crouching and gingerly leaning her back against the wall. This next bit wasn't supposed to take long. Most of the circumstances they'd foreseen involved people chasing Maggie, so in theory, there ought to be someone showing up any minute now. Headlights flashed across the wall adjacent to Maggie, coming toward her. The dark blue Honda Accord they belonged to showed up a moment later and stopped outside her hiding place. It flashed its turn signal twice, then shifted into park, and the door opened. A young man climbed out, all long limbs and long hair, and he barely bent over to pull the trunk release.
"Your chauffeur awaits," he said quietly in Maggie's direction.
"What's the invisible chicken's name?" she kept to the darkness. The man snorted,
"Theodore."
Satisfied with the code phrase, Maggie stood and slung her bag back over her shoulder, coming out into the light.
"Hiya."
"Hey."
The man walked her around to the back of the car and opened the trunk wide.
"Name's Josh."
"Nice to meet you, Josh." He reached out, offering to take her bag. She passed it over, then climbed into the trunk with his help.
"Cozy. About as much room as you can get in a sedan back here."
Josh settled the bag beside Maggie as comfortably as he could.
"You ready?"
"As I'll ever be."
"You're not weirded out about transporting some random woman in your trunk?"
He snickered.
"I'm a good friend of Pharaoh's. I know what you do for a living. I don't know why she's asked me to stick you in my trunk, but I'm sure you know that when Pharaoh asks you to do something, you do it."
Maggie finished. "Sounds about right. Well, thank you. I appreciate it."
"No problem. I'll try to keep the ride as smooth as I can."
"Thanks." He nodded, shut the trunk, and climbed into the driver's seat a few moments later. The car dipped. Then the slam of the driver's side door rocked the frame to the right. He put them in gear, and away they went.
"This is nuts," Maggie thought to herself. "Why did we decide I needed to ride in a trunk? I don't even technically know where I'm going. Am I being an idiot?"
"I mean, shut up, Matt," she huffed. "Except don't, because if you do, I will be bored out of my tree for the next God knows how long."
"Well, you get to snooze through Joseph's Landing's morning rush hour."
He was amused.
"Don't have to contend with anyone's road rage."
"I wish I knew where I was going. I still don't quite get why Pharaoh didn't tell me."
"Probably for safety's sake. If only one person knows the details of all the plans, and everyone else involved only knows bits and pieces, it's much less likely that whoever's coming after you would find out where you were going ahead of time. Also, this trunk's been smell-proofed."
"What? Wouldn't that mean airtight?" Maggie's heart jumped into high gear. "I'll suffocate."
"It's bespelled, you noodlehead."
Maggie blinked, then drew a slow, deep breath.
"Right. Magic. It's a thing. Did you know magic was a thing?"
"Matter of fact, I did."
He chuckled.
"You're keyed up, Mags. Totally understandable. But we trust Pharaoh, right?"
"Yeah. Yeah, we trust Pharaoh."
She let out another breath. "Thinking ahead to scent-proof the trunk is a stroke of genius." She paused, then frowned.
"If it's scent-proof, why do I smell something other than granola bars? Like bacon? Smells like Josh left you food in here. I think it's behind you." Maggie squirmed over and found an insulated lunch kit. She maneuvered it open and discovered the source of the mouth-watering smell. A breakfast sandwich, wrapped in wax paper, and still piping hot. "I think I like this guy," she thought as she chowed down. They drove for about 20 minutes in slow stop-and-start traffic, the morning rush hour. When they paused long enough for Josh to shift into park, the passenger's side door opened, and someone got in. They idled for several minutes, and Maggie heard murmuring through the back seat, but nothing came through clearly enough for her to understand it, even with her enhanced shifter hearing. "I think she magicked the back seat, too," she grumbled. "I don't like being left in the dark." Both doors opened. The passenger door closed almost immediately, and the driver's side door closed again after a longer pause. Then they were off again, into the crawl of commuter traffic. Eventually, the ride became smoother. Given the reduction in turns and stops, Maggie presumed they were on the highway. The long stretch of road and the gentle vibration of the car lulled her into a doze, then a full-on sleep. It wasn't like there was much else to do anyway. She'd tried reading on her phone for a while, but there was too much jostling for that to be comfortable. And she'd put her headphones in her duffel bag, so music was out. The next time Maggie woke, they weren't moving, and the car was off. She briefly wondered if they had reached their destination and if the trunk would open shortly to let her out. There was an emergency release inside, but she knew it would be wisest to stay in and hidden for as long as possible. That said, she was beginning to need a bathroom, so she heard a light clunk on the side of the car, followed by the driver's side door opening and, shortly after, a creak and the unscrewing of the gas cap. Ah, time to fuel up. The gurgle of the gas pump ran for a minute or two, slowed, then stopped. The gas cap screwed back on, the cover clicked shut, and even though Maggie half expected it, the double knock on the trunk made her jump out of her skin. "Yeah," she said. The key turned in the trunk's lock, and the hatch levered open. Maggie covered her eyes, squinting against the daylight until her vision adjusted. "Oh, hi, Pharaoh. Pop yourself in a time bubble and use the bathroom," her friend instructed. "I'll grab food and leave it in here for you." Maggie hauled herself out of the trunk with Pharaoh's help. "Ow. Thanks. Don't leave without me." They were back on the road minutes later. Maggie curled up in the opposite direction in an attempt to keep herself from getting irreversibly pretzeled. She ate the food Pharaoh had left for her, a box of chicken nuggets, much easier to eat while tied in a knot, and settled in to listen to an audiobook. She'd been smart enough to fish her headphones out before getting back in the trunk. Pharaoh still hadn't told her where they were going, but at this point, Maggie had given up. She'd find out when she got there. She fell asleep again at some point during the audiobook and grumbled when she woke up and realized she'd have to figure out where she'd fallen asleep, go back, and re-listen. "We've stopped again," she realized. "The car's off, and it's doing that ticking thing they do when they're cooling down. Have we arrived, or are we fueling up again? I'm hungry enough that I could eat a horse, which means it's been at least a few hours." Tap, tap on the trunk. "I'm awake." Maggie lifted her hand to shield herself from the incoming light, only to find that it was dark when the trunk opened. "Oh, guess we've been going for a while, huh?" "That we have." Pharaoh reached in to help her out. "We've arrived." Maggie took Pharaoh's hand and levered herself out with a groan. "Thank God for that, because if we had to go any farther, I think I'd have to revolt and at least lie in the back seat." Pharaoh laughed. "No, we're here. No more contortionism required." "Where's here?" Maggie stretched and looked around. Pharaoh had parked behind a walk-up apartment building in a city's downtown core. Now that Maggie was out of the trunk, she heard the bustling nightlife, and her eyes were adjusting to the light pollution. Vancouver. Come on, let's get you inside. Vancouver? Maggie was incredulous. How'd we get to Vancouver in a day? Pharaoh raised an eyebrow.
Magic highway? Duh.
Maggie was glad she was leaning over to get her duffel bag because it hid her blush. Oh, right. I think I left my brain in the trunk. Hang on. Pharaoh laughed and closed the trunk after Maggie stepped back, then led them into the apartment building's back door. She led Maggie up the back stairs and down the hallway on the fifth floor, then unlocked apartment 514 and opened that door.
Ah, you finally made it,
a familiar voice drawled. Familiar enough that Maggie did a double take. James? She walked in behind Pharaoh, then stepped to the side to see around her. And her heart sank. Sure enough, there was James Shelton, kicked back on a sofa with a bottle of beer in his hand. In the chair across from him was his son Cole, because of course they'd both be here. How could this have gone any other way?
Hey, Maggie.
Hi, Maggie said weakly. I think I need to chat with Pharaoh about the definition of escape plan. Chapter 3. By the time Maggie had come out of the bathroom after washing off the grime of a multi-hour car trip in a trunk, Pharaoh and Shelton had disappeared into the kitchen. She wasn't initially sure why Cole hadn't followed them, but she had a suspicion.
Can we talk?
Yep, suspicion confirmed. Maggie glanced around the apartment. Is there somewhere we can chat that isn't right off the room with your dad in it?
Bedroom?
Cole motioned toward the short hallway Maggie had come from.
Sure.
She headed back that way with Cole following and turned into the room where she'd put her suitcase 30 minutes ago. Once in, she sat cross-legged in the center of the bed and Cole perched on the edge.
So, what do you want to talk about?
Cole gave her half a look.
I'm not dumb, Maggie. I know you weren't exactly happy to see me, and you've been avoiding me.
Maggie squirmed, unwilling to meet his eyes.
Sorry, I've been... Let's drop the excuses. We've both been making them.
She looked up, surprised.
Are you pissed off at me?
He made a sound in the back of his throat.
Yes?
No? A little? He scrubbed his hands over his face. It was still weird to see him clean-shaven, but he'd hated the feel of his beard underneath the surgical masks.
No, I'm not mad. I'm hurt. I'm annoyed that this has gone on so long, but I'm as annoyed at myself for that as I am at you. I knew we were rocky before Christmas, but I buried myself in school and ignored it. Then...
Inertia? Maggie suggested, with more than a hint of rue. I know the feeling. For what it's worth, I'm sorry I let it go on this long, too. He nodded.
I appreciate the apology. Can we start from the same page now and really talk about this?
Maggie sighed and laced her fingers in her lap.
Sure. Where do you want to start?
He climbed up on the bed next to her, stretching his legs out and leaning back on his hands.
Before Christmas, I guess, she replied.
I think the awkwardness was mostly me at that point. I felt shitty for not having told you I was working with your dad, but it also pissed me off that you were so pissed off about it. Part of me felt like it wasn't fair and that you should have understood the position I was in. She sighed. Before you say anything, I know that's not fair. You had every right to be pissed at me for keeping a secret like that from you, no matter how valid my reasons might have been. So I'll own that one. I was being petty, and I apologize. Both for being petty and not being open with you about it.
Fair enough.
Cole nodded.
Apology accepted. For what it's worth, I think I was holding more of a grudge than was necessary. I do get why you didn't tell me. Especially now that I'm looking back at how awkward things got between Dad and me once we finally did start interacting with each other.
It was pretty excruciating sometimes, Maggie teased lightly.
Don't I know it?
Cole admitted with an eye roll and a head shake.
So I'm sorry I made it awkward. That didn't help.
Apology accepted, Maggie echoed him. I'd be lying if I said that was all it was, though. And that's still not all it is, either.
Oh?
God, Cole, don't give me the puppy dog eyes yet. I'll cry. She grinned half-heartedly and aimed an elbow at him, which he blocked with a chuckle.
I've been missing something for months now. That's why you visited the shifter pack, right?
More or less. She picked at a stray thread on the faded yellow and white bedspread before continuing. I didn't tell you everything about that trip.
I'll say. You told me that my dad got you out after the pack decided to kill you, and that's about it. Talk about the Cliff Notes version.
Heh, you're not wrong. She drew a deep breath, still staring at the intricate pattern of daisies and paisley under her fingers. Before they discovered I was a shifter, there were quite a few people who wanted me to stay and become a pack member, because the likelihood of any kids of mine being shifters would be high.
If you had kids,
she snorted. Yeah, that's not exactly an option in shifter culture.
Pleasant.
Uh-huh. Anyway, once my secret came out, a lot of folks decided I'd be better off dead. Blah, blah, heresy, blasphemy, blah, blah, you know.
But not everyone.
Bingo. There was one guy in particular.
Oh, do I need to go knock heads?
She laughed, grateful for the break in tension, especially since she knew it was about to redouble. No, but your defense of my honor is appreciated. This guy, Liam was his name, he believed from the moment he met me that I was his fated mate. Cole stared at her, mouth open a smidge, and he blinked a couple of times before saying,
You're kidding me, right?
Not even a little. Liam was dead set on me being his mate. We even had a conversation about how I already had a boyfriend, hi, and he said, sure, I had a boyfriend, but I didn't have a mate, and just... Oh, hell. Yep. That's kind of how my whole visit went, to be honest.
I'm glad you got out.
Me too. It was thanks to Liam that I got out. If he hadn't snuck me out right at the end there, he was the one who got in touch with your dad, too. Cole was quiet for several long seconds.
I guess I owe this guy some gratitude, then, he said at last.
You and me both, she said. He turned out to be a pretty decent guy in the end. Said he knew I didn't want to be a figurehead or a symbol or any of that crap, so he gave up what he honestly believed was his destiny, don't get me started, for me to be happy. She paused, then added, We fought well together. Cole watched her play with the thread.
Did you want to be with him? I'm not trying to creep on your emotions, but you're, kind of throwing them off big time here. And you feel pretty sad. It doesn't seem like your style, but...
What, being sad?
No, wanting to be with this guy.
Oh. No, I didn't want to be with him. I didn't want to be part of a pack either, for reasons I'm sure you can guess. She looked up at him again.
We're not going to talk about the butterflies that hatched in your guts when you were leaving, eh?
Matt put in quietly.
Still keeping that one to yourself?
She ignored him and the gnawing guilt under her ribs. So, no, I didn't want Liam. But that certainty they have, that conviction, that deep sense of belief, that's what I want.
And you don't feel that here, with me.
I don't feel it anywhere. I still feel like I'm completely adrift. I'm sorry. Cole shook his head. You don't need to apologize for that. If anyone should understand that feelings are valid, it's me. Sure, but it's what you do with them that matters, and I haven't done great with that lately.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?